This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
Okay, hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Marble Halls and Silver Screens. I know it's been a couple of weeks, but I am glad to be back with you. My name is Sarah Lee, if you're new to the show. And I will be talking today about several items, I think, that are fairly interesting, maybe a little uncomfortable, in the case of one of the political and or cultural subjects I'm going to be discussing today. But there's just been a lot going on, and so I'm gonna try to digest for you some of the sort of, you know, large news stories that are out there. I try to stay to about three or four subjects so that we don't get overloaded, and I try to keep the show at least at 30 minutes. So that's what we're gonna aim for today. What I want to talk about today on the political side is, and it's not overtly political, it's not really about politicians, but there are two things that kind of happened, that have been happening and then did happen these past couple of weeks. Elon Musk has, revealed himself to be just an absolute enigma. And then he did something quite extraordinary. He bought a bunch of shares of stock at Twitter and became the single largest shareholder. And then they invited him to join the board. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. Also on the political cultural side, I want to discuss this very odd and uncomfortable reality that we're looking at right now, where the issue of child abuse and the sexualization of children has become pervasive. It's everywhere. And on the one hand, it's uncomfortable because it's certainly not dinner table polite conversation. But on the other hand, it's extraordinarily important that it's everywhere because it gives us an opportunity to really knuckle down and fight it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. Then I'm going to give you my thoughts on King Richard, which I just recently saw finally. And then I'm going to end the show by talking about, I'm a little late on this subject. It's because it happened in the break when I, I'm not recording. But I'm going to talk about the Oscar slap, because I actually think, despite, sort of the, how do I put this? I have mixed feelings on what happened and what went down, but I think there's a lot of good that came out of it, and maybe will continue to come of it. So we're going to talk about all of those things, but first we're going to take a quick commercial break, and I hope you'll stick around and you will come back and hear about all of these my thoughts, and maybe that'll help you form your own thoughts on some of these crazy wild things we're dealing with right now. Okay, y'all sit tight. We'll be right back. Okay, and we're back. Hey. Okay. Let's talk about Elon Musk just a brief minute, shall we? So, Elon Musk, as I mentioned, bought, I want to say, was it 6.2 or 9.2? I can't remember the actual percentage of stock that he bought, but he became the largest single shareholder of Twitter. And just prior to doing this, he had been kind of holding informal polls on Twitter, like, asking people what they thought about it, had been making statements about free speech, a lot of libertarian and conservative leaning people were very pleased with Elon Musk's approach to the notion of, a suppressed speech and what that does to society, certainly a free society that we try to cultivate here. So when Musk bought all of this stock and was then invited to join the Twitter board, which my understanding is that that may have been a defensive act. I don't know that for sure. I haven't looked into it myself, but a friend of mine who I trust told me that it was to keep Musk from, basically he agreed that if they invited him onto the board, he would not buy more than a certain percentage of stock. So it was a defensive move on their part, at least according to my friend. Check it out. Look it up for yourself. And so libertarians and conservatives are pretty excited about this. And I've got to be honest, if he maintains these principles that he so far has seemed to adhere to about free and open debate and exchange of expression and you know, why those principles are very important for the concept of freedom in a free society, it will be a very good thing. Twitter is a fantastic platform, but the suppression of speech and the suppression of news reports, the one most people cite is the one just before the 2020 election, the Hunter Biden laptop story that the New York Post broke, that Twitter shut down. You couldn't, and other platforms shut down. People didn't know about it. Just the nerds that hang out on Twitter, like me and, you know, political nerds and people that are just, you know, sort of rabidly using the platform. There's now, you know, there are now arguments from the left and some on the right. I'm not going to name names, but all you have to do is go out there and watch him pontificating on how it didn't matter that they suppressed this story. Trump probably, I just don't know that I agree that Trump never would have, you know, that Trump may have been elected if that had, if people had known about that story. I'm just going to let that sit out there. You can check out who that was for yourself. He was he's a nominal conservative, but go give it a whirl. The point is that the story should never have been suppressed. The New York Times and other news outlets are now, quote, legitimizing it. And my understanding is they're not doing any new reporting. It is just the same story that it was. There may be more to come, but they haven't done any more fact-checking. They haven't confirmed it with anyone else. It was legitimate when it came out. And a social media application suppressed it. So if Musk joins the Twitter board and actually maintains these sort of principles of free expression, that could be very, very good. The concern, and this is certainly something we talk about at the day job because we deal with all things philanthropy and nonprofits and the role some of these, like, you know, it's like the new Gilded Age, right? These billionaires have on our society. This kind of behavior, by the way, is why antitrust laws were originally envisioned and written. I should just go ahead and say that, no matter how you feel about those laws. This sort of, you know, outsized influence of, you know, very, very, very wealthy people is in part why some of those laws exist. So we are watching Musk, and I wrote about this recently, you know, from a philanthropic perspective. There are certainly concerns about his willingness to work in China. I think he's got a data center there. So he's just enigmatic. He could really go either way. And as a colleague of mine pointed out when we discussed this at work, we also thought maybe Jeff Bezos was kind of an unknown, could go either way guy too when he bought the Washington Post. And as my colleague said, he turned out to be just a basic orthodox liberal. So we'll see what Musk does. But in any event, another coworker of mine who is just very sort of impressed with Musk because he's like, he's a disruptor and we need that. And I don't disagree with that. I think that's actually true. We do need disruptors. And so, you know, he's a bit of a black swan. So we'll see how this all plays out. All right. So there's that. The other topic I wanted to discuss from the political side today, it's a tougher topic. I don't really like discussing it. Nobody likes talking about it. It's a very strange thing that's popping up everywhere, from Epstein and Epstein's Island to the SCOTUS concerns about Ketanji Brown Jackson and her tendency to be lenient in sentencing child pornographers, consumers of child pornography, I should say, to, you know, the hilariously named by the left Don't Say Gay Bill in Florida, which just doesn't say that at all. It's basically an attempt to keep teachers of very young children from discussing their sexuality with children and keeping it from the parents. The left has done a very good job of trying to link that to, you know, this notion that this is, you know, an anti-gay bill, but I don't know if that's really going to stick because, you know, many, many people who prey on children, it has nothing to do with homosexuality, right? They're heterosexual. And it shouldn't even be discussed in those terms anyway. These are predators and their victims. So it doesn't really matter what their particular, you know, interest is. They're predators. So we're seeing a lot of the discussion of sexualization of children and, you know, this, there's a strange soul sickness on the left where they're defending some of this stuff. They're parsing the language to the point that they're trying to make it seem like the conservatives who are really concerned about it and maybe a bit hyperbolically are calling everyone groomers about it because that's the nature of social media, you know, the slapback. They're trying to make that sound worse than the actual thing they're fighting, which is people, adults preying on children. So that in a way is a defense of the behavior. That's how I see it. And that is very, very, very strange. Again, these are some prominent conservatives that are actually doing this. So there's a soul sickness right now on the left side of the political sphere and those trying to curry favor with the left that I was unaware of. I always knew there was some there, but this sort of, boy, their willingness to die on this hill is very, very unexpected. And I just want to point out before I move on, there is, you know, a lot of evidence to suggest that, you know, this sort of what the teachers and the people who are in Disney now and the people who are saying, no, this is a good thing that children are being introduced to this stuff at a very young age. There's actually a lot of evidence, a lot of really good data that suggests that that is radically untrue. What it's actually doing, it looks like, based on the data, is confusing the hell out of kids, confusing the hell out of them. They don't know if they're coming, going, sitting, standing, have no idea. There's a great article from, I want to say, back in 2021. Let me see if I can find it here. I had it pulled up. The headline is, "When Teens Question Their Gender, Social Media Can Provide Support and Pressure." And it basically talks about that. It talks about how kids looking for support groups when they're questioning their gender, oftentimes it looks like they're getting these ideas. Now, we know this from culture itself, is they can go to this cultural, you know, machine, the internet, and try to find support. And what they're finding is people sort of pushing them into it, right? this article is from back in October of 2021. It's very much worth a read. And, you know, it's interesting because this was before all of this stuff began to really come out about what's going on in the schools. Here's one anecdote, and this is a young man who visited a Discord chat room. And if you're unfamiliar with Discord, that's what it is. It's basically a chat room. It was a chat room that was for artists and people interested in Japanese anime, and it was also known to be inclusive of people in the LGBT community. And this young man named Noah was, for the first time in his life, someone he said he'd never questioned his sexuality or gender identity before, but he was all of the sudden, because he's joined this chat room, very privy to discussions about these things. He'd never heard of things like being pansexual and things like that prior to joining this this chat room. And pansexual, if you don't know what that means, it means being attracted to, this is from the article, being attracted to people regardless of their sex or gender identity. Gender fluidity was also something that he had never heard about before, but was listening to in this Discord chat room. So He started to kind of wonder if these things applied to him, and he'd never wondered any of those things before. He hadn't, you know, encountered them. So this is definitely a chicken and an egg question, right? So it got to the point, Noah says, where people told me that if I'm questioning feeling those things, then I definitely am gender fluid. It was very black and white. At that point, I was like, maybe they're right, said Noah. Was this something that's always been there and I hadn't noticed it before? Some of his childhood friends told him it seemed out of left field, he said, adding, I just ignored them. So this is kind of some of the stuff that happens, right? Noah ended up, his parents got involved. They told him to take a break from Discord. They sent him to a therapist. And then after that happened, he came to the conclusion that he was neither gender fluid nor pansexual. So this is the kind of stuff that get, now this isn't unusual. Every generation of young people deals with peer pressure like this, but it is heavy duty online. And now apparently it's in the schools, where the schools used to be, you know, you hid these things from the schools. The teachers are now actually promoting this stuff. And all you have to do is go to Libs of TikTok on Twitter to see what I mean. There was a really good, there's an excellent article I want to tell you about in American Conservative, which, full disclosure, I write for them as well. This one was written by John Hershauer. It came out just a few days ago. And it's called Pushing Pills on TikTok. And there's this this company called Cerebral, where, according to Hershauer, this company provides customers with direct-to-door prescription psychiatric medication. It also runs its own TikTok account, where it promotes, quote, medication management for anxiety, depression, insomnia, and more. By the way, I'm going to be writing about this for Red State, so keep an eye out for this article. It has several paid influencers who post promotional spots on the site with the hashtag Cerebral Partner. It even brought on Olympic gymnast Simone Biles as a chief impact officer. So the way that Hershauer characterizes this, and it's really brilliant, he says, plugging SSRIs on TikTok is a little like selling OxyContin outside of a rehab facility. It may be evil, but you marvel at the gall, right? That's an excellent way of putting it. And that's what I think has been overwhelming to me lately, just this soul sickness where they're dying on this hill of, you know, defending the discussion of sexuality and pansexuality and gender fluidity for children as young as like 4 to 8 years old or something. And then this, you know, it's the same gall that you see with this company that's pushing head meds basically to young girls who use TikTok. And the issue of TikTok, you know, there's a great Substack article about how the teen girls are the ones who won't forget COVID. Also Google that. And one of the things this young girl, you know, mentions who's bored as hell at home, not being able to go to school, is that she's so bored she can't even bring herself to make TikTok videos, which is interesting that she can't do it. She's bored enough not to want to use TikTok. But what that tells you is that TikTok is a thing, right? The fact that she doesn't want to make TikTok videos is huge because it's that big a deal that everyone is doing it and she can't even bring herself to do the thing that everyone's doing. So pushing these pills on TikTok is a big deal. Not to mention TikTok's association with, you know, the Chinese Communist Party. And you can look that up too. So there is this weird soul sickness on the left, and it's dangerous, and it's, you know, sorry, I'm going to say it, it's dangerous. I'm sorry if that rhetoric is too strong for you guys, right? You don't like groomers. You think that's too harsh. I tend to agree. You know, you can't call everybody groomers. But I get the impetus and the desire to do that. But as people have pointed out, one of the reasons it's maybe not appropriate to call everyone who backs this kind of, you know, stuff going on in the schools is it's really not about grooming in a lot of cases. No doubt there are predators and that it is about that for them. But it's really about breaking children's trust with their families, telling them they don't have to tell their parents things, confusing them at a very young age, and turning them into little wards of the state. And we all know what that means. If you're a ward of the state and your system is, you know, cultivating, you know, nice little quiet cogs in the machine, that is a system of government that we have been fighting against since it reared up its evil little head in the late 1800s. And yes, I'm referring to communism. So that's where I think we're at, y'all. That's why I think we have to fight really, 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 really hard, both morally, ethically, from a perspective of freedom. I don't think it's a bad idea to call out the conservatives who are equivocating on these issues. I don't understand where they're coming from. These are extremely important battles. This present darkness, you know, sorry to get religious on you, but we've got to fight. And anybody, it is in some ways black and white. Not everything is. Some things are, you know, there are very few absolutes, but this one I think is one. There is one side or the other on this issue of what's going on with our kids. So I'm going to end it there. I'm going to move on from that because I do want to talk about a film that was, you know, dealt with the way I think you protect kids, and that's King Richard. So that's a nice segue. I loved King Richard. I just saw it, and I've been wanting to watch it for a while. And then after, of course, I saw the Oscars slap heard around the world, I was like, okay, I definitely have to watch it. And I'll deal with the slap stuff in a second, but let me just say that I think this film definitely made me cry a couple times. I also have a very demanding father whom I love very much, and I thank him for that. And King Richard Williams was indeed that for his daughters, openly and proudly so. I know that the film takes some liberties with how much he was like that. Apparently his memoir, he was pretty hard on them. But there's one scene where the police show up to their house because a horrible nosy Karen neighbor calls the police on he and his wife, saying that he's basically being abusive because he's too hard on them. And he tells the cops in the defects lady, I have to be, or they're going to end up on the streets of Compton getting shot. And as such, they're amazing tennis players and they're, you know, top of their classes. So I think Richard Williams, I think he had a lot of reasons for pushing his daughters, particularly Venus and Serena, who did end up becoming the best tennis players in the world, both of them. Serena, they say, may be the best ever. And Venus, you know, has won Wimbledon several times. Like, they're both incredible. He did it, basically. He succeeded. And I think initially his idea was, you know, about money. But you can tell, and I take a bit of pride in this, that he's from Louisiana. There's something very Southern about his approach, right? And you see it in the film, and then I did some reading about, you know, the differences between the film and his memoir, which I would like to read. This sort of notion of, you know, we've got it, we'll do it ourselves, we might be different, it doesn't matter, we're going to get it done. You know, the concept of humility in your wins. I love that this film ended on a loss for Venus. And you know, her tears that she had let her family down, and this very hard driving father looking at her and saying, no, you didn't. You did it. You won, basically. You had the best tennis player in the world shaking in her boots. And she was like 14 years old at the time. So I thought this movie was fantastic, and I actually identified with it quite a bit. Like I said, I have a very strong-willed father who was very hard on me and very demanding and expected a lot of me. So I got it. I don't think he was quite the level of Richard Williams, but I saw my dad in that character, and I liked it a lot, a great deal. So now to talk about, was it worthy of Will Smith's Oscar? I think so. I mean, look, I'm a huge fan of Will Smith. I think he's incredibly talented. I also think he's probably a decent guy. He plays these roles, especially these roles of father. And I've heard and seen pictures and heard things he said about his own kids. And I think that's a very important thing to him, not just in his work, but in his personal life, his role as a dad, his role as a man. So Richard Williams, I think that's the case as well. I know that Venus and Serena were involved in the making of this film, and they wanted to, they took, I think that the movie kind of glosses over some of the harder parts of Richard Williams. He had, for example, he was unfaithful to his wife, apparently, according to those who knew him quite frequently. They gloss over a lot of that because that's our dad. And so there's a real sense, this movie captures, you know, that relationship between, you know, the love a daughter has for their dad, who looks out for them and protects them. And you do gloss over a lot of stuff. You almost never know your dad as like a man, because that's your dad and it's a different thing. They're your protector, they're daddy, right? And this movie toys with that and plays with it, and I think it's a really beautiful film. And I think that Will Smith did a really wonderful job. And he's so good when he's playing indignant, you know, where I just remember the first time I really took him seriously was Six Degrees of Separation. And I remember thinking in that film that he got that sort of understanding of being brilliant, and people, he really got what it feels like to be brilliant and people underestimating you because of where you come from or what you look like, right? And I actually sort of gravitate toward those kinds of stories. So he plays that kind of character very well, and he plays it with a lot of heart. And I'm a big, huge fan. So I would say King Richard was well deserving of the accolades. I enjoyed it. Any movie that makes me cry has done its basically its job. So I enjoyed this one quite tremendously. All of the acting, the writing is fantastic. All of the actors are great. Many of them are unknown. The tennis was fantastic to watch. And if you like tennis, you should just see it anyway, because it's one of the great sports stories of our time. I mean, sports films are great because that's what they are. They fill your heart with how sports makes you feel when you win, right? It's kind of unlike anything else. So definitely worth your time. I would see King Richard. So let's just move very briefly into the slap, since that's related to this subject. You know, I watched it just like everybody else, and Will Smith, I think, has a domestic situation that is very difficult for him to negotiate. And I'm sorry, guys, but I'm going to say this. I've seen this before my brothers married the women they should be with. A couple of them were not married to the women they should be with. And when Will Smith said in his acceptance speech that love makes you do crazy things, there's nothing truer on the planet than that statement. So I think his domestic situation is difficult, and I'm not going to rehash that. We all know why. I don't even dislike Jada Pinkett Smith. I think she has her own things that make her interesting. And you can't really get inside people's bedroom. I don't know why they made the decisions that they made in their marriage. But I will say that flaunting your boyfriend on red carpet events when your husband is one of the biggest movie stars in the world is pretty cruel. Okay, so I'll say that about Jada. I find that to be the one point in all of this that makes me go, I gotta side with Will on this one, right? I don't know what happened in their marriage, but I just feel like when you're out there flaunting it but not divorcing, you're making a cuckold of the man, and that's pretty cruel. So I think he's got this domestic situation that bubbled up and we saw it. And his acceptance speech was, while I thought, you know, like a lot of people thought that maybe he, you know, used that platform and essentially asked for forgiveness, I saw a man brokenhearted in that. And my boyfriend said to me, I hope it doesn't, you know, that it's everything turns out okay, because this is a man who I think is deeply sad. Doesn't mean it, you know, that's the end of the story. Things can change, but it was stunning to me how sad he seemed to me. That said, here's what I thought was really cool about it. It's a weird word for it, but I really did. I've been thinking about it a lot. First of all, it introduced some real masculine energy into what I jokingly called the vagina monologues, which is actually a real play, and it's terrible. and just that whole, like, God, faux feminism thing that Hollywood, just the whole woke, I just, ugh, dripping with wokeness. These two men, that was a real moment of manhood between both Will Smith and Chris Rock. Will Smith, you know, doing what he did, that was masculine energy. Chris Rock's behavior in the aftermath, first of all, he took that hit. I know it wasn't like the hardest hit in the world, but he took it and handled it well, and then didn't throw his friend under the bus either. He behaved like a man in the aftermath. He didn't, you know, he wasn't out there screaming to the press and crying and everything. He acted like a man about it. So masculine energy, incredible to see at the Oscars. It's been a long time. I felt like I was watching John Wayne, you know what I mean? Or Clint Eastwood. I was just like, thank God, two men behaving like men, you know? And do I think that that's a negative to say that men, you know, having a physical altercation with a woman because a woman is involved in some capacity, and that behaving like men is a bad characterization? No, I do not. That's how men have been handling their differences since time immemorial, okay? Now, do I think that was the appropriate venue for that? I do not. I have friends that disagree with me on that. I think Will is a comedian. Chris Rock is a comedian. Will needs to understand that comedy is hard. I mean, roasts are difficult, and he was roasting his wife, and that tells me that Will Smith is really sort of dealing with something. And certainly he distracted from everyone else's. I mean, Questlove won the best documentary, and, you know, nobody knew about it. Kenneth Branagh and you know, the Belfast film won some things. Coda won some things. And all anyone could talk about was Will Smith and Chris Rock. And so, yes, that was incredibly selfish. So I do not agree that that was the venue for it. Personally, I think you wait for the dude out back, right? If you got to handle it that way. But that is one thing I thought that actually was a positive. The other thing that I think is even a bigger positive, and I don't think anybody's really talking about it that much, but it, to me, it was the most incredible part of it. God bless him. Denzel Washington took that moment to interject in the most unholy cesspool of a culture of Hollywood. Some God. And nobody needs it like Hollywood, right? His statement to Will Smith, like, be careful, because when you're at your highest, that's when the devil comes for you. I think that's what he said. Some approximation of that. And then Will Smith repeated that through tears. I can't tell you that my heart actually leapt with joy at that, because this is a culture that just the worst things happen to people. Great things happen too, but some of the stuff that, you know, the rumors that come out of Hollywood are just, I mean, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah, you know what I mean? The fabled Sodom and Gomorrah at times. So for that moment to be a moment where God was revealed, I thought was, it makes me want to cry, because it is so strange how God shows up in the hardest times. And you have to look. And this one was right there in your face. I mean, it was mentioned. And yet still people, they're more comfortable talking about, you know, the issue of what's going on with the sexualization of children than they are that Denzel Washington talked about God at the Oscars and how wonderful that was. So I thought that was actually, in the long run, a very, very good thing that might actually lead to some very good things. And total overall, I think the slap was actually, except for the people that didn't get their recognition, and if we can make some headway into making sure that we talk about those people and those accolades and those awards for the great work that they did, then we'll be really doing something. But I think the slap overall was actually, and maybe it's just my need to be optimistic, a good thing. But I hope Will Smith sorts out the domestic stuff, because I've seen that before, and it's a breaking point he's at. So And I think he's very talented, and he has a lot more to do if he wants to. So, all right, I'm going to end it there, you guys. Thanks, as always, for listening. I'm going to try to have a good weekend. It's a little chilly outside, which I don't love, but I'm really ready for kind of, you know, early summer to hit. But I'll do my best to have fun anyway. I hope you guys do as well. As usual, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Be kind. Be strong. Be fighters. And we'll talk again next week. I'll see you with caution. Watch your back, fellas. She can be coming after your girlfriend next. There's a joker on the loose from the psychiatric ward. His face is up on the bulletin board with a report. The FCB Radio Network. First class broadcasting worldwide.